All right, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Big Bang and Creationism podcast. I think I'm going to try and get a podcast out every Monday to you, so you'll have one every week instead of having to wait for a month like the first time. So I'm just going to start the podcast off with some news. I got this news from the NCSE, that's National Center for Science Education site. Oklahoma is trying to introduce an academic freedom bill in their house. It's basically an anti-evolution bill. If you're in Oklahoma, please fight this bill. It's going to try to ruin the education in the state by kind of redefining what's allowed to be science so that they can fit creationism and intelligent design into the classroom. Apparently Utah and Missouri are also trying to do the same thing. One, I think, is a Senate bill, and the other one is also a House bill. So if you're in those three states just mentioned, please do all that you can to get your people to fight this bill, and hopefully it won't be passed. Also, I just want to make a little note about the last podcast. I said that if the Earth was conflated to the size of the solar system, then a string would be the size of a house. Yeah, I was kind of wrong there, so scratch that part. Change the word Earth with atom. So if an atom was conflated to the size of a solar system, the string would be the size of a house. I thought something was wrong after I put that podcast out, and then I realized, yeah, I did. So now that I got everything cleared up, we're going to start with a creationist problem. I've got a pretty long speech about black holes today, so if you want to learn about black holes, stay tuned. So now let's talk about this creationist problem with the Big Bang. Now, this problem with the Big Bang is a little more scientific than the last one, so let's see what they have to say. Their claim is that the moon can only be in orbit for about 1.5 billion years before it would crash into the Earth, and therefore the Earth-Moon system cannot be 4.6 billion years old. This kind of has an effect for what we think the age of the Earth-Moon system is, which is 4.6 billion years old. I did research this claim pretty much in depth a while ago, and I still have the research paper I did on that. So let's get into what kind of problems they're bringing up and why they are incorrect in the way they're looking at it. One problem is that with most of the ways they look at things, it's pretty linear. For example, when they look at population growth, they think it must be only 6,000 years back, because if it was millions of years back, then, well, if the population is growing as it was now, then, you know, we'd have trillions of people. But they don't take into account that things like that aren't linear. I mean, people are going to die, there's going to be wars, mass extinctions, environmental change, etc. And the same thing with the Earth-Moon system. They think because it's receding at 3.8 centimeters per year, and it growing by that much, that we're going to have 3.8 centimeters all the time. And that's just not so. And the reason we know this is due to something known as tidal rhythmites. What these are records of wave height in strata. What I mean is, when waves go up against a bit of rock a long time ago, they leave these kind of markers, and there are thin layers of sediment deposited. And we know how high the waves are due to the height of the height of these strata. And so if they're little, we know that the waves aren't very big, and if they grow, we know that the tides are affecting the strata more. And George E. Williams of the Review of Geophysics put the rate of the moon drift about 2 billion years ago to 600 million. I think that's the Proterozoic era. He put it at 1.41 centimeters per year versus today's 3.8 centimeters per year. So as you can see, the moon has been constantly getting further and further away, and as it does, the gravitational attraction to the Earth gets less, and therefore the moon starts going more rapidly away. Also, the moon could not have been closer than what's known as the Roche limit. It's basically at a point where if the moon is any closer, the gravitational force of the Earth would basically tear it to shreds. So basically, the moon could be in orbit around the Earth, and a long time ago it moved slower, and it was drifting away slower, but it was never closer than what's known as the Roche limit. So the Earth-Moon system is obviously more than, you know, 1.2 billion years old. In spite of what creationists say, I think I did a back of the hand kind of calculation and found it could have been around for 10 billion years at certain rate, I don't have the actual figure with me, so take that with a grain of salt. So basically, the creationist claim that the Earth-Moon system could not have been more than 1.5 billion years old is incorrect. All right, so let's get into the podcast topic of the day, which is black holes. I got an email from someone wanting to learn a bit more about black holes, and so I thought it would be a good topic to discuss today. I did a bit of research on my own to find out a little bit more about black holes to let you know. So without further ado, let's get into the topic. Defining a black hole. Black hole is an object that is so massive, not even light can escape. There are several reasons that black holes exist. One of them has to do with something known as the Schwarzschild radius. This radius, found by a guy named Schwarzschild, obviously, relates an object's radius to its mass. An object has to be so big in order to hold a certain amount of mass, and if it's less than the Schwarzschild radius, that is, if the radius of the object is less than what's needed to hold its mass, it will start to collapse into itself. So if something is too dense for what it is, for example, I think the Schwarzschild radius of the sun is 3 kilometers. And so if all that mass that's currently in the sun was compressed into an area less than 3 kilometers, then it would collapse into what's known as a black hole, because there would be the gravitational force of the object on itself is so great that it would just continue to collapse into a point. Also, when we hear that light does not escape a black hole, why is it not able to get out? And it has to do with something known as escape velocity. Escape velocity is the velocity needed to escape the gravitational pull of an object. For example, when you see a rocket taking off, going into space, it needs to travel really, really fast in order to escape the gravitational pull of the Earth, the escape velocity. And the black hole's escape velocity is so great due to how much mass is in there, the escape velocity is greater than the speed of light, and so light cannot travel fast enough to escape the pull of the black hole. And because basically the speed of light is a cosmic speed limit, you cannot get anything out of a black hole unless we take into quantum effects, which we'll talk about a little later in the program. So we got a few types of black holes that we can talk about. There is supermassive, stellar, and possibly micro, which we could be able to make in a lab theoretically one day, and primordial black holes, which might have very low masses and would be created early in the universe's period when there were lots of pressure areas. But basically, a good question is, how do we see black holes? Obviously, they don't emit light or any kind of electromagnetic spectrum. So how can we be able to see them? And there are a few methods we have. One is stars orbiting nothing. And stars can orbit black holes if they're at a certain distance. Black holes don't just suck everything, and otherwise we wouldn't have a universe, obviously. So if you see a star orbiting nothing, either it's wobbling due to the motion of some kind of planet, or it's actually orbiting around an object that we can't see, which could be a black hole, it could be some kind of dark matter object. Also, we have something known as gravitational lensing. Basically, what happens is, if an object passes in front of a star, and this object is, I don't know, say, a dark matter star, the light will get refracted around it, and this is due to our knowledge of special relativity. We've found this out. And so if a star will get brighter and then get dimmer again, we know that something passed in front of it to cause this light to get accentuated. And so obviously that has to be something, either if it's dark matter or if it's a black hole, you don't know. Also, black holes have some characteristics. There are jets of subatomic particles that will be shot out in either direction. This is due to the magnetic fields that are around the black hole. They get twisted and distorted in such a way that they excite the material that's being accreted around the black hole, and this material is shot in either direction of the black hole. It's important to note that other objects will display this kind of stuff, but material that's falling into a black hole will never be seen to pass the event horizon, which I will talk about later. All right, so let's look at some of the features of a black hole. What defines a black hole? So let's start with the accretion disk. When a black hole sucks in material, the material is going to be passing around and around and orbiting the black hole until it either just simply orbits the black hole or it gets eventually sucked into the event horizon and we never see it again. So if there's an accretion disk around an object, it could be a black hole, but it also could be other dense objects that also have accretion disks. Next, we have the event horizon. The event horizon is the point past which light cannot escape. It's basically the barrier between the gravitational pull of the object and the rest of the world, and the gravitational pull of the object in question, the black hole, is so great that light can't escape, and so at the event horizon, that's the point at which, if you go into it, you'll never get out, and light can't get out, and nothing can get out. So that's what the event horizon is. Singularity, there's singularities in black holes, obviously, at the center, where there's infinite mass, or so we think. Singularities exist due to general relativity. General relativity can't handle the tiny size of the interior of a black hole, and so it basically just tells us there's an infinite amount of mass inside. If you want to refer back to the trampoline example I gave in the last podcast, imagine a trampoline that has a ton of stuff just dumped in it, basically. And at the bottom, the trampoline will be stretched down to a point, and that point would be the singularity. Some people think there's so much mass dropped in there that the trampoline would just tear, and no one really knows what goes on inside there. Again, we need a theory of quantum gravity, which unites quantum theory and general relativity, so that quantum theory can handle the tininess of the black hole singularity, and general relativity can handle the massive aspect of it. The size of a black hole is judged by the size of the event horizon. The singularity is obviously not very big, it's a point, so black holes would all be the same size if we went by that. Black holes would grow in size if they take in more matter. The reason we don't see them grow in size is because we never see anything go in. Black holes do, however, get bigger when more mass is put into them. As for what can escape a black hole, when before I said nothing could escape a black hole, that might not be technically true. Stephen Hawking, when he did work on black holes, discovered that some things might be able to escape a black hole, and these rely on a process known as quantum tunneling. Quantum tunneling is basically something that allows particles to break energy barriers that are presented when we look at things in a classical way. When I say classical, I'm referring to Isaac Newton's way of looking at things. And quantum mechanics obviously refers to the other theory we discovered in the early 1900s. Once again, I'm going to borrow from Brian Greene. He gave an excellent way of basically saying what quantum tunneling is. I think this is Brian Greene. He said the universe has some energy, and let's say a particle was someone who needed to borrow that energy. And so it would borrow the energy from the universe only if it gave it back before we could see it. And when we could see it would be one Planck time. And that is a really tiny amount of time. And if anything, we can't have anything less than that amount of time, or else we couldn't say it was less. We couldn't tell. It would involve quantum processes, and that's when all measurements are meaningless. So a particle will quantum tunnel. It will take extra energy, energy it shouldn't have, and do something that it normally shouldn't be able to do. If I threw a ball at a wall and the ball went through the wall, we would say it tunneled through the wall, and I'd have to do it within one Planck time, or else it couldn't tunnel. Turning back to the last podcast, if we remember the Dirac C, that was the outlook of the universe in a quantum mechanical sense, with virtual particles spawning out of nothingness, and just a random chaotic world of quantum mechanics, basically. And virtual particles are everywhere. They are even created in black holes. And so this is where Hawking radiation comes into play. Just beyond the event horizon, virtual particles are being spawned. And what happens is the gravitational energy inside creates a kind of potential in one of the particles, and when this antiparticle-particle pair forms, what happens is one of the particles is going to get sucked into the black hole. But the other particle is going to use this energy, harness it, and then tunnel, that is, borrow the energy from the universe, take this extra energy it shouldn't have, and kind of boost itself out of the gravitational pull of the black hole. And so when this happens, the black hole loses mass because a particle is able to escape. And as this happens over time, what happens is the black hole will decrease in size and eventually it will die. However, this will not happen in our lifetime. It won't happen in anyone's lifetime because the expected life of a black hole is, for all black holes that we've discovered, are more than the age of the universe. Some many times over, like the supermassive black holes at the center of galaxies, their expected lifespan is 10 to the 100th power of years. And so we won't see any of them die unless we're able to create ones that have tiny masses, which were the micro black holes. Or if we observe the primordial black holes, we might be able to observe some of those dying out. And we don't really know what would happen if black holes were to die out, or when they'll die out. And also, to be fair, Hawking radiation has not been verified. And the reason is we wouldn't be able to detect this this kind of electromagnetic radiation because it's so minute in the middle of the accretion disk that are around black holes. We wouldn't be able to see them because they'd be basically, they'd blend in with the accretion disk. This is basically the gist of black holes. If you would like to learn more about black holes, I can post some websites on the blog and the RSS feed. If you want to check out Wikipedia's webpage, they've always got good stuff, and with black holes, it's no different. Also, if you want to read any books by Stephen Hawking, he is basically one of the masters of black holes. He's studied them for decades. Obviously, he invented Hawking radiation. So, if you want to check out any books by him, I would highly recommend that. To tie in black holes with another creationist claim, we can look at what are known as white holes, and they're basically the opposite of black holes. So, one, the black hole sucks in matter, white holes will spew out matter. And the only reason they're even an idea is because everything in math can be given an inverse. And so white holes are just the inverse of a black hole. There is no evidence that they exist today, and due to the fact that they require some kind of hypothetical particle that would allow them to spew matter out, despite the fact that they have a large gravitational pull in them, there really is no way that these white holes could exist in reality. However, reality doesn't seem to be a barrier for creationists, and if something seems physically impossible, well, they can just have God do a miracle. And so that's the only reason I could see them even thinking that white hole cosmology, which I'll explain, is even a viable option for the origin of the universe. And what their view is basically the universe could have been spawned in a white hole, and that everything in the universe could have been spewed out. And the reason things seem billions of years old to us is due to what's known as gravitational time dilation. And it's the warping of space-time. It's basically the curvature of space-time due to the fact that we were sitting in this white hole. And therefore, when we look out, light is curved and is bent at in such a way that objects will appear older because light took longer to get to them. But really, the universe would only be 6,000 years old. Let me just clarify what gravitational time dilation is. I kind of glossed over it there. If an object travels at a really high speed, and these have to be really high speeds, close to the speed of light, the distance that they travel will become less in what's known as a Lorentz contraction. And due to this, the time they take to go a distance, if they're traveling at the speed of light, will be less to them than to someone who's stationary. Let's take the example of a photon. A photon travels at the speed of light. Therefore, to a photon, it exists and it dies at the same time. There is no beginning, middle, there's just a beginning and an end. It's the same thing. The beginning is the end and the end is the beginning. And also, to a photon, it doesn't travel any distance. The distance from here to the furthest reaches of the galaxy is nothing. The photon exists in the same spot, and the same spot to it is the galaxy and the Earth. doesn't make any sense to us. And when we look at the photon, it's taking billions of years to travel the distance. And it just has to do with the view relativity has of the universe. Black holes also undergo time dilation, and it has to do with how close one is rotating around the event horizon. I did a little calculation. If one was 0.0001, I think that's about a millimeter away from the event horizon, and you orbited at that rate, 1 day to someone who's looking at you would really, I mean, 1 day to you would be 14,142 days to someone who's looking at you from far away. And the reason is because the light that they observe when it's you rotating around the object is going to be bent so much that it's going to take that long to get out to the observer. And so this is why things appear to never go inside a black hole, because once they're in, the days it's going to take are going to be infinite. The light will never get out, and so that's why no one ever sees anyone go into the event horizon. So what white hole cosmology is really saying is that if the Earth were somehow sitting in this kind of gravitational well, I think that was the term used, then the light that would be going out and that would be observing the rest of the universe would be refracted, so that the universe would seem billions of years old, but because the Earth was actually sitting in this gravitational warping area, that we wouldn't actually be in a billion-year-old universe. We would actually be in one that's only, say, 6,000 years old, and how they get them 6,000 years old is pretty much arbitrary. They don't have any reason for it to be 6,000 instead of 8,000 or 2,000, and there are other problems with this. For starters, why would the Earth remain intact for so long in the middle of this area of gravitational pull? So let's look at the tidal force that's exerted on our Earth when we sit ourselves about a millimeter away from the event horizon of a black hole. What would happen is the Earth would be viewing the rest of the universe as 6,000 years old, even less than that. But what would happen is our Earth would be undergoing 8.6 times 10 to the 51st newtons of force. To give you a bit of an idea of how great that force is, you can calculate it on your own. I just took the Earth's mass and accelerated the Earth to the speed of light. Now, if we wanted to bring this object to a stop, it would require 1.7 times 10 to the 33rd newtons of force. That's still not as much force as is going to be exerted on the Earth by a white hole at the distance away from the event horizon that we need it to be. The only reason the author of this white hole cosmology thinks the Earth is in a space-time dip is scriptural. I guess Isaiah 55:9 says, "For the heavens are higher than the earth." And so this is his reason for his scientific, quote-unquote, belief that the Earth is actually sitting inside this kind of dip and the heavens are higher, quote-unquote, than the Earth. I emailed the author of this white hole cosmology and let him know that there were obvious flaws in his work, and they responded to me by saying that I should read his book and that all my questions would be answered. I was going to read his book. I tried to get it from my library. They wouldn't rent it for me. I wanted to buy it, but I never got around to doing that. I'm of the opinion that he kind of just want me to buy the book. I don't think there are going to be any answers for me in it. But if I do want to spend some extra money, I guess I will get the book. It's called Starlight and Time. So if I wanted to check that out, I would, and I might just do that. So if anybody else wants to check it out and email me with what they find, that would be great as well. All right, well, this is all I have for the show today. I guess I'm going to wrap it up. I hope you guys learned something. If you have anything you want to see or hear, I mean, on the show, for the next podcast, just write me, let me know. I've had some emails, and I'm pretty sure I know what I'm going to do for the next podcast, but if you want anything else, I could throw it in there, find time, or just do it the week after. So just email me, keep listening, and we'll talk next week.